Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community. And now, today's message.
It's an honor to be with you here this morning and with this great group on this wonderful summer day after serving this week. And I know you've been studying the life of Elijah, and I like the subtitle, From Obscurity to Empowerment. And this morning, my focus is going to be on just that, empowering you to live out the calling that God's placed on your life and the plans He has for you using the talents and the strengths that He's given you and the being the best version of yourself that you can be. Before you argue with me that you don't know what God has planned for you, or you don't know if you have any talents, I want you to stay with me. Don't stop listening, okay? This is for you. Don't determine that it isn't already just by the title. Because I beg to differ, and my hope this morning is that you, through my message and the voice of the Holy Spirit speaking into your heart, that you're going to feel truly empowered to live out your strengths and be everything that God's created you to be. And I want you to see yourself the way that God sees you. I don't want you to think about other things, but I want you to really try to let the Lord speak to you this morning if you're struggling in this way. Some of us have no trouble with confidence. But yet in that confidence, there's still times that we don't know exactly who we are or what's happening, and there's things that are like, I don't know if I can do this. But I want you to see yourself the way God sees you, a beautiful, talented, amazing, precious child who belongs to Him. Unfortunately, though, in that, many people throughout their lives have come to believe they don't have any talents and abilities. I travel the country, I speak to people, I try to help them understand that God-given talents and abilities they've been given, and many times they just think that they're void of that. For some of you, maybe your talents are hidden beneath the rubble of years of self-doubt, or the blame of others, or shame. Or in some cases, maybe you're wearing a label of criticism and name-calling. Maybe you're beaten down you believe you're worthless and useless, and much of your focus on your life has been on what you don't have, or what you can't do, or what you won't be, and all of that, rather than on what you do have, and who you really are, and what you can do, because God created you. You and I have the cloak. We wear it proudly sometimes, unfortunately, of the woulda, shoulda, coulda, don't, won't, can't, aren't. You know what I'm talking about? And a lot of times that thing we put on, that woulda, shoulda, coulda, so on, comes from us because of things that we are thinking. And we recognize so often it's easier to focus on our failures and our faults and our weaknesses and our deficits rather than on our goodness and our strengths. And I see some young people here this morning, and some of you, these are difficult times in your life because there's a lot of voices trying to tell you who to be and what to do. And there's a lot of pressure to be like somebody else, and there's a lot of things that can pull you into, maybe if I go over here and do this, I'll fit. Maybe if I go over here and do this, I'll fit. I want you to think about the fact that God has created you and gifted you, and He wants you to be all that He's created you to be. So the very thought of for some of us, of this whole idea of being empowered might be a little foreign. The thought of being empowered to be somebody, to do something. I used to ask my students, who expects you to be somebody? Who expects you to do something? And if you're not sure this morning, I know one thing for sure. God expects you to be somebody, and He expects you to do something. The somebody He wants you to be is who He's created you to be. And the something He wants you to do is what He's called and equipped you to do. And so this morning, I want to pause just a minute. I want to define for you the word empower. Empowering is an interesting concept. And many use it, and some say it's overused, and some might say, oh, you're empowered because you have a choice of different shampoos in the store. Or maybe they say you're empowered because of the fact that you have 100 different kinds of cereal that you can pick from. But Elijah was empowered from obscurity to empowerment. What is it? I think it's the process of enhancing our capacity to make choices and to transfer those into desired outcomes and actions. Empowerment means that you provide inspiration and meaning. When you're empowered, you're enabled to something. You feel capable. You feel valued and energized. Power is at the root of this. That throws some people off sometimes. But I want you to think about it as having power within. Finding and embracing your own voice, your own self-confidence in who you are, being self-aware of your capacities and loving yourself. Not in an arrogant way. Some people get all hung up on that. Oh, yeah, this ego, this self-love. But it's the kind of thing where we think about the fact that the way God loves us, who am I in His eyes? And seeing ourselves the way God sees us, our Abba Father, the one who created us, who loves us, who takes great pride in us, just as you and I do in our children. I've never met a parent who didn't think their child was extraordinary, filled with tremendous untapped potential, just waiting for the right moment or the right coach or the right situation to fully expose that. The truth is, you and I, all, each of us has untapped potential. Even in who we are, we all have the ability to do something that goes beyond what we believe we have the capacity to do. The interesting thing is that most of us believe in that concept about someone else and for someone else, but we have a hard time seeing it in our own selves. Thinking wrongly about ourselves can be a terrible downer, which may be the result of wrong self-image of who we are in Christ. As we become more confident in who we are, and how it is that God has created and equipped us to fulfill His plan and His purpose for our lives, we become more empowered, we become more motivated, we become more inspired and encouraged. And when God is involved in this process through prayer, through Bible reading, through relationship with Him, we're strengthened and encouraged, and we have His power conferred upon us. We are empowered by the Holy Spirit. And from my perspective, there's no greater responsibility than to fully develop and to fully use our God-given talents and strengths in work and service as an act of worship and commitment and gratitude to God. And many of you did that yesterday, and many of you are going to do that this week, and many of you find ways to do that. And I'll bet you right now, most of you weren't doing the exact same thing in the exact same way yesterday. Yes, you all showed up, and yes, some of you were handing out food, and some of you were thinking about the specifics of it and the details of it, and others were you handing it out, and some of you were taking care of the people, really taking care of the people, and other of you were saying, oh, here's your food, have a great day, on to the next thing. But you were doing it because you were using your gifts and ability. You made yourself available. You gave as an act of worship and commitment and gratitude to God. Now, why is Elijah important? Well, if we look at 1 Kings 18, he defeated the worship of the Hebrew God over that of the Canaanite deity Baal. God performed many miracles through Elijah, including resurrection of the widow's son from dead to life, bringing fire down from the sky, entering heaven alive by fire. He was sent to show Israel their evil ways and encourage them to return to the Lord. He was given important tasks. He was asked to have hard conversations and do hard things. He was a mentor to others. He taught and inspired Elisha, who assumed his ministry. Yet he was a dedicated servant of the Lord in a time when it was very dangerous to even believe in or worship the true God. There were several times in his life when Elijah demonstrated great faith in God. He confronted Ahab. God used him to bring a drought into the land. He put his life on the line, having faith that God would answer his prayer and show himself to his people. Elijah was obedient. On many occasions, God gave Elijah very difficult commands. He told him to go to a river and wait there, and the ravens would provide for him, and he did it. His dynamic living and his courageous ministry were not the absence of personal weaknesses and temptation and failure or even fear. They were because he trusted in God. He had faith. Yes, he felt like he didn't belong there. There were times I'm sure he doubted. He wasn't quite sure how he was going to do all the things God called him to do, but he kept doing it and kept walking in that. Elijah's name is of Hebrew origin. It means Yahweh is my God. I point this out because when we name our kids, there's usually a reason that we choose that name. It has meaning. It's significant for some reason or another. And thinking about Elijah, if you look up Elijah and what it means, there's lots of descriptors other than the Yahweh is my God. Some of these things that I saw listed were that if you have the name Elijah, you're probably someone who has, you're full of life. That might be what it means. Maybe you're uplifting and inspiring, or you're generous in your giving, and several other descriptors. And it's important because our name is important to us. Why is our name important to us? Well, it's who we are. It's an identifier. We don't walk into the room and just not, we meet somebody and say, my name is, hi, I'm so-and-so. We identify ourselves. We tell you who we are. My name's important. I don't like it when it's mispronounced or misspelled, which happens about every day. Many of you have names that are often mispronounced or misspelled. Or maybe you get called by the name of a brother or a sister or somebody else. And it's frustrating because we don't feel seen or acknowledged, or that we're important enough for you to know me or remember my name. Your name is who you are. We start with that. It's unique to you. It's specific to you. It has special meaning to you. It has significance to those who named you. Like Elijah, not only is his name unique, not only is what he does unique, but we are also unique. God created every single one of us for a purpose. We're each unique with individual potentials and opportunities that are limited by our attitude, our faith, our awareness of God, and the gifts and the abilities that he's given us, and our availability to him. God uses the ordinary to do the extraordinary. He uses you and he uses me. Common, ordinary, broken, damaged, insecure, inferior, inadequate, thinking and feeling that we're incapable. Because you know what? It is part of his plan. You are never too broken. You're never too damaged. God's redemption and restoration is for you to use that as part of his plan. Your failure doesn't mess up your future. Who you aren't doesn't mean it impacts who you are. Because maybe you just haven't got there yet. Maybe you've let somebody tell you that you're not good enough or you're not going to measure up. But part of God's plan, if we look at Ephesians 2:10, tells us a little bit about why he's not afraid of us. If we look at Ephesians 2:10, it says, "For we are God's workmanship." In some scriptures and translations, it says we are his masterpiece. And it goes on to say, he created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us to do. Did you hear that? He created you, and not just did he create you, he planned for you to do good things. You know who's most surprised by those good things we do? We are. He's sitting there saying, well, it's about time you got on with it. I planned it. I've been waiting for you to catch up. If you think about a masterpiece, it's a work of outstanding artistry. It's done by a qualified master craftsman. Whenever I think of a masterpiece, I always think of the Mona Lisa. Because, you know, we hear about this Mona Lisa, this masterpiece. Have any of you ever seen the Mona Lisa? Been there? My daughter and I went to Paris a few years ago, and we saw lots of things, but we were determined we were going to see the Mona Lisa. So we went to the Louvre, and we got there early, and we were going to be the first ones in the door because we were going to go there first and beat the crowd. So we got there, we were waiting, the doors open, we took off running, we were headed down the hallway, we were going to find the Mona Lisa, and we came running down the hallway, and we turned the corner, and we just went, it's about this big, behind a glass. I have pictures in my house that are bigger than that. Yet, it's priceless. It's a work of art. It's a masterpiece. And here, the scripture is saying we are God's masterpiece, even more valuable than the Mona Lisa. A masterpiece is valuable, precious, expensive, and you know what? The value is given by the master artist. Who's our master artist? Jesus. What's he say? You are my masterpiece. The Greek word for masterpiece is poema. When you think about poetry, we're his poetry. It depicts such intimacy and relationship characterized by beauty, with intensity of emotion. You, an outstanding piece of art, created intimately by the master with intense emotion, who already has relationship with you. He, the master creator, designed you with great beauty, a plan, a purpose, a desire for you to do good things in order to fulfill the purpose he planned for your life. The Passion Translation for this verse reads like this: we've become his poetry, a recreated people that will fulfill the destiny he has given each of us, for we are joined to Jesus, the Anointed One. Even before we were born, God planned in advance our destiny and the good works we would do to fulfill it. Are you doing that today? I wanted to include that translation just because it uses the word poetry. Because it says again, it reminds us again, God planned it in advance. This verse not only suggests to us that God has a purpose for our life, it tells us we're special, we're his creativity, we're his elegance, his treasure, the cream of the crop. For some of you, these words are foreign to you. But open up, listen. Let this in, receive it. Because even though we are created with such intimacy and intricacy with love from the master, and we're a priceless treasure, we've come to believe that we're invaluable and worthless and void of those good things. But when you discover how the Creator God designed and created you and the good things he desires for you, you begin to find great joy in life, because God has equipped and uniquely qualified you to do only what you can do. He created you to work with children. He's created you to counsel, to be a stay-at-home mom, retired, single. Some of you are thinkers, others are feelers. Some very disciplined and ordered, others are relational. Some of you are very competitive, like me. Others are very organized and detail-oriented. While some of you are very empathic, some of you have a gentle spirit, others of you are intense, you're passionate, you're prayer warriors. He's called some of you to teach. He's given some of you people to serve and to help and to love, because you're the only one who can reach them. Your gifts and abilities are the only one that are going to connect. Maybe you work in a medical clinic, you work with unwed mothers, you work with troubled teenagers, and only you can go be in that place and that space for that time, because he's got you there using the gifts he's given you to fulfill the plan he's already prepared for you. And for every purpose he's given for each of you, sometimes your sacrifice is going to be different too. and they're different from the person seated next to you. I don't have to tell you that. Look around. If you're married, you know that you and your spouse are different. My husband and I are very different. If you know my husband, you know we are very different. And it's okay. Because God created us that way. When I started preaching, I used to think, oh man, this is going to be really difficult because I have to follow him. Because he and I do not preach the same. We don't even come at it the same way. His delivery and his temperament and personality is way different than mine. But you know what? It's okay. Because God's going to use me and my gifts and abilities to speak to people in a way that are different than the way he uses Bob to speak to people. And it's the same with you. You are not the same as the people next to you, but that's okay. God calls us according to his plan and his will for our lives. And the goal is for you and I to be where he wants you to be, doing what he wants you to be doing, fulfilling his plan, taking pleasure in, honoring him with the strengths he gave you, and enjoying the fullness of his presence. Think about it. He planned for you to do great things. So we're talking about Elijah. Let me talk about Moses for a minute. I want to focus on Moses too. I'll talk about a couple different ones. Looking at Exodus chapters 2, 3, and 4. We pick up the story of Moses. He's a grown man. He's gone out among his people. He's impulsively killed an Egyptian for beating one of his own people. So he's forced to flee for his own life, and he settles in the Midian desert. And years later, God finds Moses tending to his father-in-law's sheep. And he uses the burning bush to get Moses' attention and to speak to him. Sometimes God has to use big things to get our attention because we're not paying attention. And Moses didn't think much of the burning bush because it's pretty common in the desert land. However, the fires weren't consuming the bush. He walks over to check it out, and that's when God calls him by name. There it is again, the identifying moment. Calls him by name, gives him a mission to lead his people out of Egypt. And in verse 11 of Exodus 3, Moses says to God, "Who am I?" God ever ask you to do something and you just kind of go, "Who am I?" You probably want somebody else over there and not me. When I was working on my doctorate, my professor had been at UCLA and he came over to Azusa Pacific. And he was working with the Gallup organization. He was working with Don Clifton, who owned the Gallup organization and wrote the StrengthsFinder assessment, which Pastor Steve alluded to, that I have spent 20 years working with and doing research and writing curriculum and things like that. And Dr. Anderson in class one day was talking and he looked at me and he said, "I need you at Gallup. Don and I need you to help us with some things." And I said, "I don't think so. You got the wrong person." And he said, "No, I don't." I said, yeah, look at all these people in my class. You don't need me." And he said, "No, I don't." And I opened my mouth to say something else, and he said, "Stop talking." And he went on to say to me, "You're one of the brightest students I've ever met in all my 30 years of education. You this, this, this." And he began to speak into me, and I just looked at him. My eyes got bigger, and I felt about this big. And for a long time, thankfully, God used me to get there, and I've had great opportunity. But for a long time, I used to say, "Well, I was just in the right place at the right time." But you know what? God planned for me to do good things, and he's planned for you to do good things. And nothing happens by accident, because he is using you if we're allowing him to. And do you know what else? Nothing's wasted in his economy. It doesn't matter what you've done or where you've been or what you haven't done or how you think that this is going to mess you up and you can't possibly be used for his glory. Nothing is wasted in his economy. It's all part of his plan. It's all part of the gifts and abilities he's given you. It's all part of what he wants you to do. And he's got you in a place and in a space that only you can be there and do what he needs to be done. So we look at Moses. Who am I? See, he says all the reasons that he can't go. They're not going to listen to me. They won't believe me. They'll make fun of me. I'm not a good speaker. I don't have any equipment for the job. And in verse 19, God told Moses what he's to do and to say. And he said, I know the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. I will stretch out my hand. I will strike the Egyptians, all the wonders I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people. So when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. See, God's making a way. We argue, and he says, you just let me take care of this. I'm going to do what you need to do. Walk ye in it. And my focus then turns to chapter 4. Moses said, what if they don't listen to me? What if they don't believe me? And you know what the Lord said to him? The Lord said, what is that in your hand? What is that in your hand? Moses said, well, it's a staff, the very tool that shepherds use. He said, well, throw it on the ground. See, the question from God comes to you and I today, what's in your hand? I've given you the equipment that you need. I've placed within you all the things that you need to do and have so that you can carry out what I've asked you to do. We have it all right here in our hands to fulfill the call of God on our life, yet we fail to see it. We doubt, we question, we think somehow we're a fraud. It's not really real. Moses felt that. I'm sure Elijah felt that. You and I feel that. When you sense God has something new for you to do, to risk, to step out, do you argue, but God, I'm not smart enough, wise enough, good enough, significant enough, tall enough, short enough? People are going to laugh at me. I can't, I won't, I don't. I'm not cut out for this. And he looks at you and he says, what's in your hand? I planned for you to do this. Question God asked Moses, designed to discover. He already had the resources that he needed. So it is with you and me. We have the assurance, and we have the resources and the equipment. And when we have a case of the I can't, or I don't, or I won't, he says, oh no, what's in your hand? Elijah struggled with fear. He lacked faith in God. He had highs and lows in his walk with God. He had some really high highs and he had some really low lows. He faced the doubts. He faced the I can't. He faced the I'm not, just like you and me and Moses. But he rose above that and he realized the divine resources that were his. And sometimes we think, you know, if only we had so-and-so's brains or so-and-so's memory or personality or we were as articulate as he is or she is, or we could do this or we could do that. Elijah and Moses are only two of the commentaries against the excuses and the fears that so often paralyze us. Knowing our God-given gifts and talents is important to our confidence that God's will and ability to do a job is already placed within us. In 1 Samuel 17, David went up against Goliath. And not only did he conquer the outer foe, he also seemed to have defeated the inner foe of self-doubt. The toughness of a Goliath seems like nothing, no big deal, easy peasy compared to the struggle going on within you and me. The reason many of us never fully develop and never really develop fully is very little to do with the toughness of what we face on the outside. The difficult circumstances has come our way. Those are similar for all of us. But the difficulty, the giants on the inside are the real problems. The giants we fight, that we battle against with our self-image and our self-confidence and our abilities and our capacities. For those of you raised in the church, maybe you're older, maybe you're younger, you're more conservative, more traditional background. Maybe you were taught as a child to see yourself in loathsome to your maker. Oh, despicable me, right? When we see ourselves as unworthy before God who created us, we become more unworthy and unfit and undeserving because we get ourselves put down so far. We find it hard to see the God-given good in our lives. We believe the lies of others. We allow ourselves to become prisoners of someone else's expectations. We struggle to recognize that we have been chosen, hand-picked by God. He has planted gifts and abilities inside of you. John 15, you did not choose me, I chose you. And I appointed you to go and to bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. Daddy, Abba, Father will give you what you ask because you were chosen. He picked you. He equipped you. He has called you to lead, to influence, to inspire, to encourage, to motivate, just like he did David and Elijah and Moses and Esther and Daniel in the lion's den and Paul and Peter and so on and so forth. Meaning and failure don't keep company. Meaning, significance, value, worth cannot keep company with failure and less than and disappointment. Neither does low self-esteem and pleasing God. Because when I feel poorly about myself, I struggle to feel as though I measure up and I can please God. Seeing and accepting who God made you to be will make you usable to Him who gave you those gifts to begin with. And again, I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm talking about seeing myself the way God sees me. When He looks at me, He sees this priceless, beautiful, gifted, amazing person. 2 Corinthians 6:11 to 13, the Message translation says, Dear Corinthians, I can't tell you how much I long for you to enter into this wide open, spacious life. We didn't fence you in. The smallness you feel comes from within you. Your lives aren't small, but you're living them in a small way. I'm speaking as plainly as I can and with great affection. Open up your lives. Live openly and expansively. And when we're fulfilling the call of God on our life and we're doing what He's planned for us to do, we're living openly, expansively. How many times do I shrink my space? How many times do I shut down and close in and fence my own self in? God defines you and gives you a calling. A calling's like this seed that God planted within you at birth. A unique combination of strengths and talents that's nurtured and grows to become this flower that blooms and blossoms and glorifies God. The whole point of a calling is simply understanding who you are and how you can best serve God with the gifts and abilities He's given you. One important note, the seeds of your strengths and talents, I like to call them the seeds of greatness, are already within you. Again, what's in your hand? Just like they were in Elijah, from obscurity to empowerment. Parker Palmer refers to these seeds as the seeds of our true self. And as you discover your gifts and ability, and you discover how they complement your calling in life, and in the discovery process, there's this requirement to listen. Because your calling is or can be your vocation. If you can go to that next slide, just for nothing else but the words up there. But the word vocation is written and rooted in the Latin word for voice. And so as we're talking about how it is we become empowered to do and to be all that God's created us to do and be, there's this voice of God that we listen to. And Parker Palmer says, vocation doesn't mean a goal I pursue. It's a calling that I hear. Before I can tell my life what I intend to do with it, I must listen to what it intends to do with me. What is your life saying? Do this. Here's the passion. Here's the draw. Here's what I can't imagine not doing. Palmer goes on to say, vocation doesn't come from a voice out there to calling me to be something or someone that I'm not. It comes from a voice in here calling me to be the person I was born to become the original selfhood given to me at birth by God, planned for you to do good works. In other words, we're taking note of what's in our hand. We're taking note of the good things God's given us. We're taking note of what's inside, where that passion is. It's important to live out our strengths for two reasons. One, it honors God. Two, God comes to us and builds his church through the gifts he's given us. First, honoring God. As you've heard me say already, the strengths and talents given to each person were given to enable you to fulfill God's plan for your life. To the extent that we ignore, fail to develop, fail to live out our God-given strengths under his direction, we dishonor our Creator and make something or someone else the little g god of our lives. I return to Ephesians 2:10. We develop our strengths because he planned for us to do good things and to live as he's always wanted us to live. And I'm much less likely to doubt my abilities and compare myself to others when I keep this verse in front of me. And I'm more able to accept and appreciate who I already am. Rabbi Zuja, when he was an old man, he said, you know, in the coming world, they're not going to ask me, why were you not Moses? They're going to ask me, why were you not Zuja? And so it is with God. He's not going to ask me, why were you not Elijah? Why were you not Esther? Why were you not Moses? He's not going to ask me why I wasn't Pastor Bob or Pastor Steve or Robin. He's going to say, why weren't you Sandra? Why weren't you the person I created you to be? Why didn't you the gifts and the abilities I gave you to use? Why didn't you fulfill my plan and purpose for your life, not my plan and purpose for somebody else's life? The issue can be personalized and framed in this way. What more God-honoring thing can I do than to become the person he created me to be and fulfill his plan for my life? Second, we should live our strengths because God comes to us, you and me, and builds his church. Yep, he uses you and he uses me to build his church. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And one of the joys of a personal relationship with God is experiencing his presence. And each of us experience him and his presence differently. The different way God seems to manifest himself is through the way he has gifted us. God comes to us first in the way he created us. And he continues to come to us through the gifts and abilities he's birthed in us. The voice in here calling me to be who he created me to be, calling me into relationship with him, calling me to experience his presence, and through our individual gifts and talents, God ministers the needs of others and builds his church. Like I already mentioned, only you can go to the place and space that he's designed and created the gifts for you to go and be and do. Being open to God's presence coming to us and our willingness for his spirit to work through our gifts and abilities is a measure of our love and gratitude to him. We can personalize it in a couple ways. First of all, am I open to meeting God in the reality of my life and how he made me? Not thinking I have to do my devotions a certain way. Not thinking that I have to have a specific time or day of day or study. Not thinking I have to do my Bible and my relationship with God and enter into his presence and experiencing who he is the way somebody else does. But he's going to come to me in the way that he knows me and made me and created me. I'm busy. I move. I'm on the go. I don't stop. I'm not one to sit and muse and reflect and think and really meditate. But you know what? God says, it's okay, I made you, I know who you are. And when we're walking along and clipping along, he's right there with me and we're having conversation and we're doing it and we're going. And he knows when I call out to him. When I'm in my car on the way down this morning, I was just having church. I put in my good old Southern gospel, CDs, and I was just singing my little heart out. I love road trips. My husband won't listen to my music, but I love it and sing at the top of my lungs. But you know what? God meets me in that. He meets you when you sit in your prayer closet, or you lie prone on your floor, or you open up your word with your commentary and your Bible and your devotional books and your phone apps. It doesn't matter. He comes to you the way he created you. He knows you. He knows that. But we have to be open to inviting him into that space and letting him invade our life and our purpose and where we are and what we do on a daily basis, anytime, any place, wherever we are, because he made us and he wants to be involved in us open to him meeting us where we are, how we are, and who we are. I had a conversation with a new friend up here, female pastor. She's reached out to me for coaching and encouragement and just some strength help and just where she's at. She and her husband planted their church 6 years ago. She's the pastor. He works a job, but he supports her. He's a great ministry helpmate. In the 6 years, their church has gone from 28 to over 800 and three campuses. And on Friday, we were having a conversation, and she said to me, as we talked about all that God is doing, she said, I don't even know how it's happened. I don't know what we've done. I don't feel smart enough. I don't feel intellectual. I don't even know if I'm doing the right thing. I don't even know the next steps. I don't know how I got here. And she went on to say things like, I'm the pastor, but I'm not a theologian. I'm not a deep-thinking Bible scholar. I'm not this. I feel so inadequate. And I said to her, as I was thinking about this message, but you have gifts and talents God gave you to be you, not to be a scholar or a theologian, but to be meeting him in the way he made you. And he's using you to build his church. And he's going to use other people to build the church, help you build that church. And he's using other people to build other churches. We are building his kingdom when we make ourselves available and we're open to letting him come in the way he made us. To those of you here this morning, your calling may not be to plant a church or pastor. Your calling may not be to be up here. Your calling may be to be a greeter or to set up the chairs or flip it for VBS. That's okay. Because as long as you're doing what God's called you to do and you're using your gifts and ability, you are being one of those who is enabling and empowering yourself and others to introduce themselves to Jesus, to know him, to live for him, to be involved. And you're helping to build the church and build the kingdom. And that's ultimately the goal that we have and the call of God. Some of you are loud and proud. Some of you are quiet and shy. Some of you find yourself anywhere in between, and that's okay. It takes all of us, one body, many parts. Each of us should use whatever gift we receive to serve the Lord. Doesn't have to be like the next person. If you think about one body, many parts, I have no idea what my spleen does, but I'm pretty sure that it's important, but it's doing something while it's in there. I don't really know the purpose of my little toe except to find the leg of the chair in the dark of the night. But can I tell you, when it goes awry or when something happens, you know that it's there. Quietly, what we think insignificantly, doing its job. But your behind-the-scenes life doesn't have to be somebody else's highlight reel. It takes all of us. And we're all equipped. And those he equips, he uses. And you know what the Greek word for all is? All. None of us are exempt. He has called and equipped us all. Are you willing to let him work through his gifts and talents in you to serve others and build his church? If not, do you really want to experience God? And it's humbling to admit that the very best that's in me was given to me. Even more humbling is that the best that's in me was given to me by the God who put the world in orbit. By the one who made the sun, the moon, the stars, who created the whole earth. Yes, that God, that person, that creator of the universe said, I'm giving you these gifts. You are my masterpiece, and I plan for you to use them and to do great things. You don't have to be Moses. You don't have to be Elijah. You don't have to be anybody else. You have to be you, and you have to be all that he's called you to do and be. Our gifts are like a muscle. If we use them, they become stronger, but if not, they atrophy. And when fully developed and used, strengths and talents not only produce your greatest success, but your greatest fulfillment. The goal is to be where he wants me to be, doing what he wants me to be doing. Frederick Buechner has written, vocation, calling, is where my deep gladness meets the world's deep needs. When you are at your greatest joy and fulfillment and satisfaction and that belly laugh, you think, oh, when do I get to do this again? There's nothing better. What is it? What's happening? Buechner's definition starts with the self and moves towards the needs of the world. It begins not only with what the world needs, which is everything, but in the nature of the human self, what brings you joy, deep joy, knowing you're here on earth to use the gifts God's given you. Is there anything greater? Is there anything more fulfilling? Is there anything more fun? As we move forward in God's primary purpose, using the gifts and abilities God's given us, we each face many smaller events in the circumstances of life. We don't go from big thing to big thing to big thing to big thing. It's the daily, faithful, one step at a time, one moment at a time, like Elijah, like Moses, like David, like so many others. These many events are like threads woven into a tapestry that combine to create this elegant, beautiful picture. By themselves, they don't appear significant, but they're all vital to the overall plan of God. As I think about closing, I want to share two scriptures with you. One, Romans 12. This from the Message translation. God helping you, take your everyday ordinary life, ordinary people doing ordinary things, God's going to use to do extraordinary things. Take your everyday life, sleeping, eating, going to work, walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. What's in my hand? Here it is. Use me. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit in without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and respond to it quickly. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to the level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you and develops well-formed maturity. We have to love from the center of who we are. And finally, and now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly more than we can ask or imagine according to his power. Can you put that next slide up for me, Jennifer? Thanks. According to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church. He's empowered us. We allow him to meet us where we are. We honor him with our life, and we help build the church. Now to him who is able, according to his power at work within us. To him be glory in the church in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and ever. He's equipped you. He has chosen you. He has planned for you to do good things. He's called you by name. He wants you to embrace who you are. He wants you to own that. He doesn't want any more of this Moses. Well, who am I? Who am I? He doesn't want any more of Elijah hiding out afraid. He doesn't want any more of any of us doubting. He wants us to say yes and fulfill the call he's placed on your life. My prayer for you today is that you'll be like Moses and David and Elijah and the others, that you'll be empowered from on high to go and to be all God's designed and created for you. Not living your life in a small way. Don't fence yourself in. Take off the barriers. I don't know where you are today. I don't know what's going through your mind. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know how you feel about yourself. I don't know what any of this has said to you and what God's spoken to you. But I want you to think this morning about a few things. Are you comparing yourself to others? And you have a case of the I can't, or I don't, or I won't, or I'm not. Are you allowing someone else's words and criticisms and expectations to become your prison rather than fulfilling the call of God and the expectations he has for you? Maybe you need to reconnect even with what's in your hand. Maybe God's been asking you to do something and you're like, not me. And you realize, you know what? If I don't do it, who will? He's designed and he created and equipped me and he's calling me. I want you to bow your head and close your eyes. How many of you would say this morning, I need to open up my life? I've been fencing myself in. Been missing out a little bit on what God's called me to do. Just raise your hand. Put it up and put it down. Nobody's looking around. Judgment-free zone. How many of you know God's called you to do something and you got a good case of the I can't, or I don't, or I won't, I'm not? Time to step out. How many of you are just kind of sitting there going, I have no idea what God's called me to do. I have no idea what gifts and abilities I have, but I'm going to start a journey to figure out how it is he wants to use me, because I am not void of ability and capacity. How many of you are afraid to do the good things God called you to do? I want to give you a chance to come. The altars are open. There's no judgment. This is just come and pray. And it can be any, I ask questions. Maybe it didn't fit any of the questions for you. You just know that you need to come and pray. You need to ask God to help you. You need to really kind of tap into, what does he want me to do? I need to open up my ears. Let's stand, sing, and as we sing, just if you want to come and pray, come and pray.
This concludes the teaching. Thank you for listening, and we hope you can join us for next Sunday's service with Pastor Steve Raines.